We get to move up or down a level, depending on how you would say, regarding the corruption of the kings of Israel today. 1 Kings chapter 16, starting in verse 15. In the 27th year of King Asa, of King of Judah, Zimri reigned for 7 days in Tisra, while the people were encamped against Gibbethon of the Philistines. The encamped people heard the news, saying, Zimri has conspired and even struck down the king. So all of Israel made Omri, the commander of the army, king over Israel, on that day in the camp. Omri and all the Israel with him went up from Gibbethon and besieged Tisra. When Zimri saw the city was being captured, he entered the hall of the king's palace, and he burned down the king's palace upon him in fire, and he died. Because of his sins that he committed, doing what is evil in the eyes of the Lord, going in the way of Jeroboam, and his sins that he committed, causing Israel to sin. The rest of the deeds of Zimri and his conspiracy that he organized, behold, they are recorded in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel. At that time, the people of Israel became split into halves. Half the people followed Tibni, son of Ginath, to make him king. The other half followed Omri. The half that followed after Omri prevailed over the half that followed Tibni, son of Gibnath. Tibni died, and Omri became king. In the 31st year of Asa, king of Judah, Omri became king over all of Israel for 12 years. In Tisra he reigned for 6 years. Then he bought the mountain of Samaria from Shemer for 2 talents of silver. He built up the mountain, and he called the name of the city that he built there Shemer, after Shemer, the lord of the mountain of Samaria. Omri did what was evil in the eyes of the Lord. He was more wicked than all who had preceded him. He went in the entire path of Jeroboam, son of Nebat, and his sins that he caused Israel to commit, angering the Lord, God of Israel, with their vanities. The rest of the deeds of Omri that he did, and his mighty acts that he performed, behold, they are recorded in the book of Chronicles, the kings of Israel. Omri lay with his forefathers and was buried in Samaria, and his son Ahab reigned in his place. Ahab, son of Omri, became king over Israel in the 38th year of Asa, king of Judah. Ahab, son of Omri, reigned over Israel and Samaria for 22 years. Ahab, son of Omri, did what was evil in the eyes of the Lord more than all who preceded him. The least of his evils was going in the way of the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. He took a wife, Jezebel, daughter of Ethbaal, king of the Sidonians. And he went and worshipped the Baal and prostrated himself to it. He erected an altar for the Baal in the temple of the Baal that he built in Samaria. Ahab made an Asherah tree, and Ahab did more to anger the Lord God of Israel than all the kings of Israel who had preceded him. In his days, Hiel, the Bethelite, built up Jericho. With the death of Abiram, his firstborn, he laid its foundations. With the death of Segub, his youngest, he installed its doors. Like the word of the Lord had spoken through the hand of Joshua, son of Nun. That was 1 Kings chapter 16, verse 15 through 34. Before I get into this topic, are there any questions or issues or things that got your attention regarding this section of the chapter? Now, to recap your memories a little bit, regarding it starts out, of course, with the short reign of King Zimri of 7 days. King Zimri took over the reign from Elah, the son of Baasa, and he conspired against him. Now, Zimri was the commander of half of the chariots under Elah's command, under his kingship. Zimri was the commander of half of them, but not the whole army, of course. He conspired against him, killed all of Baasa's family, as God had prophesied that would happen. But on top of that, he also killed all of Baasa's friends, all the acquaintances that were good friends with his family. He killed all of them as well. And of course, once people, the children of Israel, in particular the army, found out what happened to their king, they were rather upset and went back and, of course, besieged again and fought against him to win. No questions? That's good. Oh, there was a question. Yes.
You read something about they went after their vanities?
Yes.
What does that mean?
It means uselessness.
Oh, okay.
Things that are not going to actually prevail to be valuable. They are a self-delusioned idea, which is what Jeroboam created. Jeroboam, when he first became king, created a new god. He made named, I think he used the same name, actually. He named the golden calves, two of them, both, this is your god. It wasn't real, it's just a punk of metal. And it was a useless item. And created idol worship, of course, as a result, and increased it. And he also, of course, shifted all the holy days in the Torah by a whole month. Because he didn't want them to accidentally go back to the temple in Jerusalem and learn the truth. He wanted to maintain their redirection. The only distinction that you get through Ahab's life and Omri as well, compared to Jeroboam, as I mentioned last time I was up here, the three kings of Solomon, Jeroboam, and Baasa all had the same basic pattern to their lives. They had a certain sequence of events. God declared he'd remove one of them, remove them eventually from their command. He gathers up somebody to do that type of work. The person comes along, takes command. This king himself died a natural death. No one killed him. Then his son comes over. Someone kills the son, or at least takes over the command from his son. Then that person is evil, or more evil than God intended, or I would say God intended, that's a wrong word. More evil than what we had thought it was going to be, until that person went through their process. And the king was either saved or killed off, depending on the descendancy of David. That sequence of events for Solomon, Jeroboam, and Baasa all was the exact same for their lives. Until Zimri comes along and kills them all off, and then commits suicide. That pattern then broke and ended. Now, what those men did, they introduced evil things and corruption and pollution within inside of God's family or God's way of doing stuff. They did not throw away what God did. That I want to bring out to your attention today. They knew that there was a God of Israel as opposed to some other God. They still recognized it was the God of Israel. All those kings did. They just labeled it a golden calf as its name, as its representative. They still use the same name. They still knew that there was a God that brought them out of Egypt. And that was the credit they gave to this particular God. That was a golden calf in the case for Jeroboam and Baasa and, of course, their children as well. So they have a golden calf that they said, God, that we understand from the entire book of Genesis and Exodus and Numbers, is this golden calf. That's essentially what they did. This golden calf did all this stuff. They brought in other things too, don't get me wrong. They brought in prostitution, both male and female. They brought in worship on Asherah poles, Asherah trees, which is other idol worship as well. Their only distinction, the only slight measure of betterness, if you use that term, they were, compared to Ahab and Omri, was they drew the line at Baal, the god of Sidonians. They drew that line. It's a murky line. You can almost not see it, but it was still there. They drew that line that these kings didn't go that far. Well, Ahab, of course, jumped in full board. This is great. Who needs this other golden calf thingamajigger? Let's go off this other wonderful new god that my wife loves. That's what he wound up doing. That's the next level which he brought up to. Instead of saying, well, there is a God of Israel, he said, well, I don't really know if there's a God of Israel, but I know there's a God called Baal. And when we're reading a lot of Ahab and what goes on in his life, essentially God is teaching him and teaching the people who he is. There's a reason. Oh, yes, go ahead.
The question is, I noticed that you said Asherah.
Yeah. Yes.
Tree. Is it a tree, a grove?
Pole.
And secondly, is Asherah a different thing, or Ashtaroth?
They're all the same derivative name.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's a tree, it's a pole, it's a grove, it's everything. Can you imagine? It's essentially, I have not studied Asherah as thoroughly as I'm sure some of you probably have. So I can't answer all your detailed questions regarding who and what that deity is supposed to be credited to. I do know it is a female deity, so I guess goddess, is what is referred to as, and she is a fertility goddess of some form, which Baal is supposed to be her husband, and Ashtar, of course, is the female goddess, the mother. Now, during Ahab's time and onward, the people of Israel got confused, and they replaced Baal and his wife, or Asherah, the goddess, with Yahuwah and his Asherah, the goddess. They got the terms mixed up. They took Baal and said, okay, well, here's now an image of Baal, and here's the image of this female goddess as well. They said, well, but they're supposed to be God of Israel, so Baal, step aside, we'll just shove, insert your God of Israel as if he married Asherah. It's a heavy pollution of what was going on. One of the hallmarks of Baal worship was child sacrifice. It was not extensive, but it was still there. So Baal, with this line that was drawn with these previous kings, did not bring that level of corruption into Israel by governmental decree. They may have done that by allowing it, but they didn't bring it in as far as being officially sanctioned religion of their kings. That's the primary distinction between Baal. Now, Baal, that is not his sole identity as far as child sacrifice. It's just one of the subsets of Baal. There's lots of other gods that were more known for that. Gods, that's the wrong word. Lots of other pagan gods that were known for that kind of identification. But Baal was still one of them. Any other questions or comments? Okay. So I got some questions for you. In verse 15, it started out, so in the 27th year, King Asa of Judah, Zimri had reigned in Tisra for 7 days. The people were encamped against Gibbethon, and blah, blah, blah. They all went up. So how long did he reign for? 7 whole days, a whole week. So then, drop down to verse 18. When it happened, Zimri saw the city was taken. He went to the citadel, the king's house, burned the king's house and himself with fire, and he died. Because of the sins which he had sinned in doing evil in the sight of the Lord, in walking the way of Jeroboam, and in his sin which he committed to make Israel sin. How many sins can a king make Israel do for 7 days? Did Israel even know he was king for 7 whole days? Not a lot. It makes you curious. How much corruption can he put upon his subjects in a single week? And it says he did it in the line or the sequence or style of Jeroboam. Now, what did Jeroboam do? Well, he commanded the people. He has new gods. He has a new sequence of holy days cycles, new priests set up, and how it all runs. In 7 days, did Zimri, who had not even established full control of the country, did he do any of those things? Executive orders. Well, I don't got executive orders yet. Not really in that respect. I mean, that isn't necessarily what it's referring to. Even though it refers to that he followed in the line of Jeroboam, that doesn't mean he had the time to create or decree all the rules Jeroboam did. There's something else he made Israel sin in. Now, don't get me wrong. Not saying he wasn't like Jeroboam. He was. In that he was intending to do, or he was doing, those same sequence of events as far as Jeroboam. He's still worshiping the same gods Jeroboam had worshipped. Still established the same rules and decrees for all his soldiers to follow. That didn't change. But Omri did the same thing. His successor. And God didn't kill Omri for it. Not at all. And although God did finally kill Ahab, Omri's son, for even worse things, what was so sinful or corruptible about Zimri that wasn't the case for Omri? What was that? Conspired? Well, Baasa conspired also. Baasa conspired against Jeroboam's son, and he brought the same conspiracy, so the conspiracy issue can't be necessarily the problem. Because although Baasa conspired and God did strike him, it was not strictly for the conspiracy. He did so. He did so with conspiracy along with other things as well that Baasa had done. Omri went out and did a straight out war to kill Zimri off, and anybody within Tisra that was defending him, because Zimri still had many chariots under his command. So what was the increased level of sin that Zimri did that God was not upset with Omri for? We have to look more deeply as far as what's being said, as far as exactly what he did. Now, I had mentioned this earlier, as far as when I was recapping some of the things that Zimri had done. Go back to verse 11 of this chapter. So read this last time. It came to pass when he began to reign, this is Zimri, as soon as he was seated on the throne, he killed all the households of Baasha, which God has said was what would happen. He did not leave him one male, which is exactly what God said would happen, neither of his kinsmen nor his friends. Thus Zimri destroyed all the household of Baasha, according to the word of the Lord, which he spoke against Baasha by the Jehu the prophet. The distinction that Zimri did was worse than Baasha, wasn't it? Baasha, when he went through, he was commanded, correction, that's not true, he was not commanded. The prophets declared to Jeroboam, he and his sons will be wiped out of all males. That's it. Zimri, and Baasha would have the exact same prophecy dumped upon him. He'd be exact duplicate of Jeroboam. All your males will be wiped out. Zimri did that part against Baasha. However, Zimri went the next step up. Who else did he kill? All of his friends and allies. Innocent people. Innocent celebrities, don't get me wrong. I'm just going to say innocent, I mean they aren't, have some other sins. They aren't not related to Baasha's corruption or all of his friends. Now, Omri was not necessarily a friend. He was opportunistic. He took the kingship. But he wasn't necessarily a friend, so he didn't kill Omri. But Zimri went up one. He got worse than his predecessors. Not necessarily worse than Omri, but worse than his predecessors. And he killed people unrelated to the king. No, who had no right to throne. But killed them off anyway. Yes, Ellie.
Wasn't it Jehu that God had sent to correct Israel or a group of people, and God said, go do it. But he had way too much fun doing it, and he did a lot more, and God brought it back on his own head, because he said, you did it, but you did it so horribly. He wanted them corrected, but not like that. And
Jehu did not quite what Zimri did, but there is another. When we get to Jehu, we'll discuss him as far as his style and what he happened to have attacked or killed. But in that case, well, we'll get there. It's the same line, though. It's the same principle, the same idea, is that Zimri went above and beyond what God had ever intended or prophesied against Baasha. So Zimri was worse than his predecessors. Hence, execution would have been fine, but suicide worked really, really well to get rid of that particular line. If this was so bad, what about Omri? Because God says, regarding Omri, that he was worse than all of his predecessors. Omri did what was evil in the eyes of the Lord, this is verse 25, and did worse than all who were before him. That includes Zimri, by the way. Let the spirit worker shot. So Zimri's bad, and Omri's worse in God's eyes. If Zimri is so bad, what makes Omri worse? What did he do that was so awful? Somehow he made it worse off. And then Ahab, his son, is even worse than that. What is the threshold? What does God say? All right, person number one is bad, I'm going to kill them. Person number two is even worse, so I'm not going to kill them. Where does God draw his line? Why does he draw a line like that?
Wherever he wants to.
Wherever he wants to. That's true. It is wherever he wants to. What's his objective? Why is he, I'm using this term, I'm using this question fakely, or not the right word, but why is he so arbitrary? It's really not. But why is he arbitrary when it appears to be? Yes, Ellie.
Is it when innocent people are killed by him, or
innocent people are made to be put under a death sentence from God by what he did.
It's bringing, that. Sorry, you have to explain that a little bit. If innocent people, okay, if he kills innocent people, the king.
Not just the bad guys, but extra people.
Okay.
Or if he takes those extra people and he brings them under a curse by his actions, a curse that will kill them.
That's fair. That's his threshold, his measuring stick that he's using. Whatever the measuring stick is, it is in fact different from the category of Jeroboam, even Solomon. Solomon, Jeroboam, Baasa, or even Zimri, God has a new measuring stick with Omri. It's a new threshold. He walked in all the ways and didn't kill him for it. And then he killed Jeroboam, he killed the other men for it. He didn't kill this one for it. And that's the distinction. What's the reason? There's a new threshold. There's a new measuring stick. I want to see what the measuring stick is. No, seven times four. That'd be awful. One generation is gone. There is no one who lived at the time of Solomon who was alive but Omri. No one remembers, no one knows what is necessarily defined as God or godly left in Israel other than a few prophets. There's no citizen, there's no child, there's no old man left. They're all gone. So after a whole generation has come and gone, what's the new threshold? What's the new measuring stick that God says, okay, I can keep on this process of killing off the kings and them improving nothing, or it's time to teach them again? Elijah the prophet shows up. Start over. You start again. You have a new generation who knows nothing about God. Their parents taught them nothing. Their grandparents taught them nothing. They're all dead anyway. There's no one left. So who's to say now when Ahab shows up, Omri, by the way, was only king for a short while. When, at the end of his reign, and through his reign, and into Ahab's reign, the whole population is gone. There's no one around. If there were a few, they were small children at the time of when Solomon, who was corrupt as well as in his latter years, there's a few small children that might have been old men by now, roughly in their 70s or so, 80 years old, at this time when Omri's king. That's not a lot. And they're not that knowledgeable as far as what life was once like. So what's the threshold? Assuming my children know nothing, not that they've been taught wrong, no, now they just plain know nothing. Continuing on the execution of their leadership isn't going to work. It's not going to succeed in teaching anyone anything. So his next threshold is back to school. Let's go back. Let's learn. Let's rediscover. Let's re-find out what's going on and reteach the people from scratch all the way over where they begin. That's what he does. That's what Elijah does, actually. If you look through the sequence of events, that's what he's doing. He's teaching them all over again. We haven't gotten to Elijah because he's in chapter 17, but we're about to. To reiterate, let's double check my speculation here. Is that in fact what God's thinking? Or at this time in Omri and Ahab's reign, is that about what's going on in God's mind? Well, the chapter itself actually tells you what's going on in God's mind. Verse 34. It tells you what's happening. In verse 34, this is why by the time Ahab has become king again, Ahab has become king now. In his days, Hillel of Bethel built Jericho. He laid his foundation with Abram his firstborn, with his youngest he set up Segub. He set up its gates according to the word of the Lord, which he had spoken through Joshua, son of Nun. When you read something like that, what's the first thing you should go back and do? Read what Joshua, son of Nun, said about this topic. This is in Joshua chapter 6. Starting in verse 18. Oh, by the way, for those who don't recall the details, Jericho, which I'm sure almost all of you do, they circled the city of Jericho a number of times. The seventh day they blew the trumpets, the whole wall came down. Rahab was saved, her family was saved. All the articles and the stuff inside the city of Jericho was supposed to be dedicated to God or completely destroyed. No one was allowed to have it. So we jump in the sequence of the last day, or the starting of the last day of the seven-day trek around the city of Jericho. Verse 18. And this is Joshua, by the way, speaking to his people. And you, by all means, keep for yourselves from the accursed things, lest you become accursed when you take the accursed things, and make the camp of Israel a curse and trouble it. But all the silver and gold, the vessels of bronze and iron are consecrated to the Lord. They are to come to the sanctuary of the Lord. Or treasury, sorry, of the Lord. So the people shouted when the priests blew the trumpets, and it happened when the people heard the sound of the trumpet, and the people shouted with a great shout, the wall fell down flat. The people went up into the city, every man straight before him, and took the city. There they destroyed all that was in the city, both man and woman, young and old, ox and sheep and donkey, with the edge of the sword. But Joshua said to the two men who had spied out the country, go in to the harlot's house, from which they bring out the young woman and all that she has, as you swore to her. The young men who had been spies went in, brought out Rahab, her father, her mother, her brothers, and all that she had. So they all went out, they brought out all her relatives and left them outside the camp of Israel. They burned the city and all that was in it with fire. Only the silver and gold, vessel of bronze and iron, they put in the treasury of the house of the Lord. Joshua spared Rahab the harlot, her father's household, and all that she had, so she dwells in Israel to this day, because she hid the messengers when Joshua sent to spy out Jericho. Then Joshua charged them at that time, saying, cursed be the man before the Lord who rises up and builds the city of Jericho. He shall lay its foundation with his firstborn, with his youngest he shall set up its gates. So the Lord was with Joshua, and his fame spread throughout all the country. This prophecy that occurred back in Joshua chapter 6 is many hundreds of years have gone by before the event actually occurs in Ahab's time. And Hillel is, by all accounts, a friend or an associate of Ahab. So when he shows up to rebuild this city, does he know anything about this prophecy? You'd think he would. You'd think he would. Or if not, when he saw his firstborn die in the foundations, somebody might point it out to him. Or when his youngest dies and sets at the gates, somebody might say, what were you thinking? Too late then, that's true. But what was he thinking? He wasn't thinking of Joshua. Who took Jericho? Who actually conquered it? God did. He said, I'm going to do this one. You go do the rest. This one's mine. So God took Jericho. How much knowledge or understanding did Ahab or any people of Israel this time remember or know of Jericho?
They followed the other guy.
Yeah. They followed Jeroboam. They knew very little of the country, of the state of what was going on. Yeah, where they came from.
Yeah.
So if they know very little, quite clearly in the last verse, verse 34, says so, because the man even demonstrates his complete ignorance of who God was, what God did. That implies that at the time of Ahab and Omri and all these men who are at the tail end of this one generation gone have no clue who God is. So it's not so much that the level of corruption is worse per se. It is more so that God's patience increased, because it's time to reteach your children all over again. It's time to start over from square one. Which, if you study and read Ahab and read what he goes through, essentially that's what happens to him. The guy essentially goes through a whole series of lessons, trying to follow at some random times God's direction, and then the first opportunity, abandoning it completely. I won't credit him too much, because he was a pretty awful person. So when God comes along and he replaces an evil king, gets rid of him because whatever his evilness he does, and a new one shows up, king, president, makes a difference, and it's worse off than the previous one, when you ask yourself, why? What purpose is there? What goal is there? What did I gain? What did the people gain? God, what were you thinking? I disagree with you. Well, what's God's reason? I have to teach you guys some stuff that you don't remember or know anymore, that you lost once or you don't care about. It's time to learn all over again. He'll have mercy. Yeah, yes, he will have mercy upon. Ellie, you had a question?
Well, he plays out that same thing before the coming of the Messiah. That Elijah the prophet has to come because we've gotten it all.
We've lost everything.
We lost it all, and he has to come back and start us over again on the right track.
Make this way straight again, the path straight again. Because they're so crooked, no one knows what straight is. They're so askewed or twisted. That's what Elijah's job was. To reteach people, okay, you have no idea where forward or front is. Let's start over again. And did Elijah go up to the mountain Carmel, which we haven't read this yet, but we will. And with the prophets of Baal, these 450 if I remember correctly, they say, okay, you know, pray to your God, you know, demonstrating to King Ahab and all the elders of Israel, okay, gave a whole day to do this. They cut themselves, lots of the things they did, trying to get fire to come down. What was the point of that? Just to make fun of them? In part. Sense of humor. In part, yeah, but to demonstrate that this is worthless. That this doesn't real. Let's reteach you and show you what is. That's the goal. Start over again. This is not the only time this happens, by the way. Meaning, start over again. God does it a few times for the two people of Israel. Because a generation goes by and then they remember nothing. Let's start over again. His patience does have its limits. He does say, okay, I can't teach you in this fashion anymore. We'll get to there many generations from now. And many kings go by before that happens. But it does happen eventually. And this corruption, unfortunately, extends off into the southern tribes as well with Jehoshaphat's wife. But we'll discuss that next time, hopefully. Or maybe the time after, I'm not quite sure. We have Elijah to go through. He's a very important prophet. We've obviously studied Elijah a lot. We've read about him over the years. And we know the various stories he goes through. He has a lot of messianic identity to him. Meaning he lives out a lot of what the Messiah does in his life. They are very, very similar. And we'll discuss that and study them a bit of what they do. And some of the prophecies that Elijah does in the presence of Ahab to teach him stuff. Now, something my father had asked or had brought up, we discussed in the book of Job, was that bad things happen to good people. It does a lot. I say, well, and God does it? Yeah, God does do it. How many prophets were butchered, killed, or maimed, one way or another, by various kings? Almost all of them. Very, very few died a natural death. I think one. One man died a natural death. The rest of them all got... Now, well, people did that. No. God sent the prophet to his death. Go do it. I believe, if I remember correctly, tradition says Isaiah was the one that got cut in half with a saw. How do you like that as an old man? Cut in half with a saw? Not a very pleasant death. But God sends these men, righteous men, to their death. Two witnesses die too. So it happens a lot. And Elijah has to watch out because, you know, it happens, it can happen to him too. we'll discuss that as he runs. And of course, as Messiah, naturally a very, very righteous individual, by all accounts, is sent to his death. So righteous men are killed all the time. To be honest, if an unrighteous man was the only one who died, would we care? Nah, he deserved it. He deserved it. Oh well, move on. When a righteous man dies, we pay attention. God willing. So these kings, we'll learn more about them as Elijah goes on and has to reteach the people what's right and what's wrong to start over again. God's mercy didn't say, okay, I'll just forgive all your sins, Omri, Ahab, all the rest of them, because they went to worse. He said, no, my mercy is going to be extended that I will teach you again. And if you're willing, you'll learn. It's helpful. It's helpful to say God, hopeful, yes, helpful and helpful. God does. He gives us a moment to say, okay, oops, we made some serious mistakes. I need to relearn, go back to square one, start again. Told you it wasn't going to take you very long. This is a short section of the chapter. Any questions or comments? Yes, Allah. No, by all means. Any questions?
It says on Kings 16:34.
Yes.
It was during this time that Hiel of Baal rebuilt Jericho. He had his foundations at the cost of his firstborn. What does that mean? And then at the cost of his youngest. I just don't get it.
They were building the city itself.
And they got killed by the wall?
Killed by, most likely, as the way that the Joshua describes it, anyone who builds a city, his firstborn will die with the foundation, and his youngest will die with it. So means each one of his children, from the first through to the last, from the beginning of the foundation through the end of it, they will all be killed. He will have no sons left. The reason a man builds a city is usually for one purpose. Fame. Name. Make a name for myself. Look what I did. Look at that thing I've huge built. Look at the Tower of Babel. Look what I did. All of them do that. That's what men do. That's what some men do. I don't. Some other men do. They look at what they've done, what they built. Will that be remembered if they have no children? So what he built, was it worth anything? Not when your children are all dead. So you lost everything, the establishing your name for yourself, the loss of it was overpowering or took over his accomplishment. So no one remembers the guy's children's names, really. They're written here, but no one remembers them. He didn't do anything. So the children, either in the process of building it, those sons were killed, meaning stone fell on them, whatever. Or an illness struck them while he was building it. Either way, the guy was unaware enough of Joshua's prophecy to realize, I should stop. I should prevent this. Now, not to say that now the city of Jericho is cursed. It's not. Well, actually, it is if you're Jewish, because they kill you. But it's just a city now. It's just a town. This prophecy was fulfilled and completed within the Bible. So within the context of the Bible, it's all there. So it was the curse of the city was started there, and it ended there. The curse is now paid for and done. So modern-day Jericho is no bearing on this prophecy here at that time. But this man lost all of his sons. Yes, Ellie.
That's interesting, because I didn't even think about it like that. I had always heard that one of the things that you did, death of the firstborn,
it could be a sacrifice.
It's always been a big deal, right. And that the firstborn was taken and the pole put on that body, securing everlasting life for the city. And
right.
I didn't know about the second kid, but the gate was secured with him.
Right.
Sacrifice.
It is. I will concede it is possible that one of the commentators did argue that it is possible that the man sacrificed his own children, one for the foundation and one for the gate. However, it doesn't specify that, and the Joshua prophesied that whoever built the first, that this will happen to them, not necessarily by their own choice, but rather by Joshua's implication and the way in which Jericho was destroyed. It's implied that whoever builds this, it's going to cost him something severe. And it wasn't necessarily by his own choice to have it cost that. Rather, it was implied, at least in Joshua's time, that it was not by choice he would lose these things. Although one could argue it was. I'm not going to say absolutely dogmatically that he did not sacrifice his own children. I assume he didn't. I'm going to be better for the doubt if nothing else.